Okay, everybody, welcome. It's a pleasure to welcome Dvorah Chait Roth. I know he's Dvorah Chait, I guess, originally, but and who is doing her pursuing her doctorate in computer science at NYU, the graduate of graduate to Midrash Lindenbaum, a graduate of the GPATS program at Stern. And I guess the reason we know each other, she's a chavrusa with my daughter Atara. So that's I don't say her claim to fame, but maybe that's how she got to Torah in Motion in the first place through Atara. So a pleasure to have you, and Vavakasha, let's get started.
Okay.
The first of the boring parshiot of the Torah, if I may say so. It's the hard. Well, you picked the hard. You know, it's been so exciting until now, and here we go, Parsha Truma. Let's see. What an introduction! That's.
I'll do my best to keep everyone interested. Thank you, Rabbi Kelman, for having me back. I'm very happy to be here again. Thank you, everyone, for coming. So we're going to focus on a very specific part of Parshat Truma. So instead of trying to tackle sort of all of these different details about the Mishkan that the Parsha is talking about, we're going to speak about the general mitzvah of building a mikdash, a Mishkan or a mikdash. We'll talk about that. So we're going to start with right at the beginning of Parshat Truma. God, we're right before this, Moshe went up on Har Sinai for, it seems like the last time. And this, the pshat is that this is what is given over to Moshe while he's up on Har Sinai. So God tells Moshe, we're in source one, Deber al Bnei Yisrael, Bikhuli Truma. So speak to Bnei Yisrael and take for me an offering. People should give donations from everyone, whatever they desire to give. And sort of here's all of different the different kinds of materials that we're looking for. And then in Pasuk Chet, it says, "Va'asuli mikdash v'shachanti b'tochon," and you will make for me a mikdash, a sanctuary, and I, God, will dwell amongst you. And then in the next pasuk, "Kechol asher ani mar'eh otcha et tavni ha'mishkan et tavni kol kelav." So you should make this sanctuary in accordance with all that I, God, am showing you, Moshe. The structure of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and the structure of all of the different pieces that are going to be used in it, the kelim. That's what they should do. Okay, now over here, just the context that we're in is the Jews are in the Midbar, they're in the desert. And this is the commandment that the this is the start of the commandments of how to build the Mishkan, the tabernacle, which was the center point of the Jews' encampment when they were in the Midbar, in wandering in the desert. So let's just take a look at Rashi for a minute over here, in source two. So Pasuk Chet, Basuli Mikdash. So what is Rashi sort of has two questions here. So what is make for me a mikdash? So how what does that mean, make for God a sanctuary? Does God need somewhere to dwell? So Rashi said, no, Basu Lishmi, it should be for my name. So a central place in the name of God. And Rashi's second implicit question is what is a mikdash? It's a Beit Kedusha. It's a house of holiness, let's say. Of worship. Okay, so this is God giving the commandment to create in his name a holy place. And now we'll skip to this in Pasuk Tet V'chein Ta'asu in source two. So what is this V'chein Ta'asu and likewise? Oh, sorry, I should share my screen. Good point. Thanks, Rabbi Kelman. Let's see. Here we go. Better? Better, everyone? Very good. Okay. So what is this V'chein Ta'asu?
You want to
So
make it just a little bit bigger? I'm so once you're
yeah.
sharing your screen.
Oh, I
Yeah.
see. Okay, one second.
Okay.
Let's do that. If I make, let's see, if I make the window bigger, I should make the font bigger as well, like this. Does this help
Yeah, that's
more?
a little better. Yeah, we do a little more.
I want a big screen here so I can make it really big. Better?
Yeah, that's fine. I think if anybody
Even
did.
bigger, I could do even bigger.
Okay.
How's
All
that?
right. Enough. Too big is not good either. Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. Go ahead.
I make
Let
it
Thank you.
smaller? Should I make it
No,
smaller?
it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. So we're over here. Thank you for that. I forgot about sharing screen. I haven't given a share on Zoom, I think, since the last time I was here. Okay, so here we are. So we're in this Rashi in source two, V'chein Ta'asu. So Rashi wants to know, so what is, so God says, you know, build me a mikdash, build me a sanctuary, just like everything I'm going to show you. And so they should do. So what's that extra of a so they should do? So Rashi says something that actually seems sort of somewhat surprising. He says, Lidoro, this is for generations to come. Em yovada chamen ha-kelim. If you lose one of the central, I think they call it like a vestment, one of the central pieces that are used in the worship, in the Mishkan, or osha kishata suli clay beit olamim, or when they are making for me these kalim, these utensils for the Beit HaMikdash, the eternal dwelling place, they should follow all of these commandments. So with this Rashi, we're starting to see sort of a jump from just the time period that B'nai Yisrael are situated in right now when they're receiving the commandments, which is the Midbar, right? So if we're just reading these psukim, it sounds like these are just about the Mishkan that they have while they're in the desert. But now Rashi is starting to speak about a more everlasting, continuous commandment, not just for now. All of these commandments are not relevant for just right now, the Mishkan we're building now, but they're going to be relevant for eternity. These should be considered like a commandment. And what is the instantiation? How do we see the Mishkan appearing in an eternal way? If the Mishkan, you know, it did only last for those 40 years in the Midbar and then was sort of rebuilt in different forms later. But if it was temporary, so what is that ongoing commandment? So presumably it's the Beit HaMikdash. The temple that we built in Jerusalem and that, God willing, we'll all see the rebuilding of very soon. But the Torah actually doesn't have any commandments about building the Beit HaMikdash, about building a permanent temple. The only commandments that we see about building such a Beit Kedusha, as Rashi says, about building a mikdash, a sanctuary for God, is in these parshio describing the building of the Mishkan. However, even though we don't have a commandment for building the Beit HaMikdash, we do have allusions to it. We do have references to the existence of an everlasting temple. And the biggest one that I'm going to speak about over here is in Parshat Re'eh. So last time I was here at Torah Motion, we spoke about Parshat Re'eh. We actually spoke about these psukim. So we're going to return to these psukim now. So God is speaking to Moshe over here about what the Jews should do once they enter the land. And first he's discussing how B'nai Yisrael needs to destroy all of the idolatry. And then he says, you know, the idolatry that was built everywhere, the nations that were living in Israel were worshiping all over the place. And he says, Lo tasun kein la Hashem Elokeichem. So now we're in source three. Don't do that to Hashem, your God. And the pshat over here is don't worship everywhere. Okay? What instead should you do? In Pasuk Hey, Ki im el hamakom asher yivchar Hashem Elokeichem. Mikol shivtechem lasum et shemo sham l'shichno tidrashu uvata shama. So instead of being like the idol worshippers before you in Israel, who worshipped everywhere, wherever they wanted, you instead will only go to the place that God chooses out of all of your tribes, where he will choose to place his name there. And you should seek out his presence and go there for worshiping. And then we continue, you know, you'll bring your karbanos, your sacrifices there. That's where you will appear before God. So in Parshat Truma, in our Parsha, we're receiving commandments about the Mishkan, which is a temporary kind of mikdash, a temporary sanctuary. Here in Devarim, we're seeing a discussion about a more permanent location that's going to be chosen that has these similar themes that we're speaking about with the Mishkan. Certainly, we have a reference to the Shekhinah, to a place where God's presence will dwell. And that's exactly how God described the Mishkan, a place for God's presence to dwell. And we'll come back to the rest of these psukim in a little while. But over here, we could see, again, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, the place that God chooses, Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokechem Bo, B'Shaken Shemo Sham, where he's going to rest his presence. So it seems like, there is this connection between the Mishkan and the Mikdash, where both of them are going to be these central dwelling places for God. And what I want to focus on tonight is what is the connection between these two places, between the temporary instantiation of a Mikdash, which is the Mishkan, and between this more permanent version of it, which is the Beit HaMikdash. And we're going to look at it in the context of two great scholars, great Torah scholars, who laid out their own count of the 613 mitzvot. One of them is known as the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, the Smag. He was from France in the 13th and 14th century. And the other is Maimonides, the Rambam. And both the Smag and the Rambam had their own counts of the 613 mitzvot, and they very often clash in how they count them. So tonight we're going to look at a debate between them on how do we view the commandment to build a Mishkan, and how does that relate to the building of the Beit HaMikdash, so the temporary and the permanent. So to start, we're going to look at the Smag. Okay, so he gives sort of an abridged version of the 613 mitzvos, in case you don't want to read his long explanation. So first, let's look at his abridged version. What does he say the mitzvah is? Live note, Beit HaBechira in source 4. It's to build the chosen house. And Beit HaBechira references the Beit HaMikdash. So what is the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to build the permanent mikdash, the Beit HaMikdash, the permanent temple. Now, what are the sources? Shenemar, Vasuli Mikdash. So that's our pasuk. That's in Parshat Truma. Make for me a sanctuary. And we know that that was in context of the Mishkan, the temporary sanctuary. Vechein Tasu. So that's the, and so you shall do, which is what Rashi picked up on. That's the Lidoros. That's the hint that this is more about something eternal. And he gives another pasuk, Bahaya Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokechem L'Shaken Et Shemo Sham. Okay, that was our pasuk from Devarim, from Parsha Re'eh, that was speaking about the Beit HaMikdash, that there will be a place that God chooses to rest his name there. So the Smag is referencing the building of the Mishkan, but it does not seem that that is what he views as the mitzvah, as the commandment. He's using this pasuk, but he's using it in terms of the eternal implications of what it tells us. We had to build a Mishkan at the time. But what is the long-term importance of that? It's for building the temple. And to give a little bit more intuition over here, it might be a little confusing. There was definitely the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, for sure thinks there was a commandment to build the Mishkan. But what gets counted in the 613? The 613 only gets mitzvos that are eternal, commandments that apply for all time. If a commandment is sort of like a temporary thing, it doesn't get counted. Okay, so it seems like the Smag thinks the commandment to build the Mishkan, that was a temporary thing. That does not get counted in the 613. And indeed, let's look over here on his elaborated version. So first he quotes this Gemara that says, three mitzvos were commanded to Israel when they entered the land in source 5, to have a king, to destroy Amalek, and picking up in the bold, va'achar she'yaniach lahem hamakom mikol oyveihem misaviv livnot b'habachira. So after they finally rest from fighting their enemies, there is a mitzvah to build the Beit HaMikdash. She'ne'emar va'avartem ategardim yeshavtem ba'aretz. So this is again in Re'eh that we saw that the sources in Devarim. So you'll cross the Yarden, you'll dwell in the land. Ba'acharkach, after they're settled in the land, ba'haya ha'makom asher yivchar Hashem elokechem l'shaken shemo sham, shama taviu et kol asher ani mitzvetchem oltechem v'zivchechem. So once you've settled, then the place that God chooses is to dwell, to rest his presence, will be where you bring all of your sacrifices. And notice at this point over here, he has dropped the references to Shemos, to the Mishkan. Okay, when he is giving our the full unabridged version, the source for building the Beit HaMikdash is just the Devarim Psukim, just the Psukim that are speaking about the Beit HaMikdash, the eternal resting place for God. And then he even, in case you're not sure, maybe the Mishkan should be, maybe, you know, the Mishkan is sort of including this. He gets very clear. He says, Zman mitzvazu shal binya beha bechira lo higia ad yamei David. So when does this commandment kick in? It kicks in once we reached the times of David, when David said, I'm ready to build a Beit HaMikdash. And that's when the Beit HaMikdash shortly after was actually built. Okay, so for the smog, even though they were commanded to build the Mishkan, the only everlasting commandment is building the Beit HaMikdash, is the permanent version of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is very nice. It gave us a lot of information about how to build the Beit HaMikdash, but the Beit HaMikdash was the real mitzvah. Now we're going to look at the Rambam. And the Rambam, Maimonides, has a different approach. Okay, so let's look in source 6. So with the Rambam, we're going to be looking at two sources. So he has a count of all of the mitzvot, just like the Sefer Mitzvot Gadol. That's called the Sefer HaMitzvot. And then he also elaborates on all of the different halachos in the Mishnah Torah. So we'll look at both of those sources. But first, in source 6, let's look at his count of the mitzvot. So he counts this as mitzvah number 20, HaMitzvah HaEsrim. Hisha in source 6, Hisha Tzivanu Livnot Beit Avoda. What is the commandment? To build a house of worship or of sacrifice. Bo Yehiyeha Hakrava, Bahavara Ta'esh Tamid, Be'ilav Yehiyeha Alicha, Vahalia Laregel, Vahakibetz Bakol Shana. And what will happen in this Beit Avoda, in this house of worship? That will be where you bring your sacrifices, your karbano, where we burn the eternal flame. And that's where everyone will go to and congregate for the Shalosh Regalim, for the times when the Jews are commanded to all congregate together. Now, the Rambam, I think we should be very careful what he's saying. He's not saying to build a Beit HaMikdash. He's saying to build a Beit Avoda, a place of worship. And what is the pasuk that he quotes? V'hu amro yitaleh v'asuli mikdash. What's the source pasuk? Is our Mishkan pasuk, to make for me a sanctuary. And now he quotes the same Gemara that the Smog quoted about the three mitzvot that we have, and he says hinei hitbar shebinyan beha bechira mitzvah b'fnei atzma. So we know that building the Beit HaMikdash is its own mitzvah, but in the formulation, he's not saying that the mitzvah is to build the Beit HaMikdash. He's saying the mitzvah is to build a place of worship. And we'll go now to the Mishnah Torah, where he gets a little bit more explicit. So over here he has, in source 7, he has an introduction at the beginning of every set of halachot, where he counts off all the mitzvot that he's going to discuss. What is the first mitzvah in Beit HaBechira, in this section of halachot? Livnot mikdash. It's just to build a sanctuary. There are actually some versions that say Beit HaMikdash, but as far as I'm aware, the more accurate, the versions that are known to have more accurate texts of the Rambam don't have Beit HaMikdash, they have Mikdash. And indeed, this makes a lot more sense, because if we look at source 8, it says, Mitzvah aseh lasot bayit lahashem, mucham lihiyot makriven bo hakarbano v'chogegin alav shalosh pa'amim bashana shenamar v'asu li mikdash. So what is the commandment? The commandment is to build a house for God, a place for God, that is ready for people to bring sacrifices there, and where we will celebrate the Shalosh Regalim. As the Pasuk says, V'asu li mikdash, you should make for me a sanctuary. And so we're seeing over here that there is a debate coming out between the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, the Smag, who was pretty explicit, who held the mitzvah is just to build the Beit HaMikdash, and the Rambam, who does not seem to be saying the mitzvah is to build that temporary sanctuary, the permanent sanctuary, but the mitzvah is to build a house of worship. And now the Rambam is going to get even more clear. He goes through every house of worship that we have had. So first he says the Mishkan that Moshe made was explained. That was temporary. So the Mishkan did not last. Then in Halacha Bayis he says when they entered the land, they had a Mishkan in Gilgal. So that was right when they crossed the Yarden, they had a Mishkan there. Umisham ba'u l'shilo, uvo sham bayit shalavanim. So then they moved to Shiloh and they built a bayit there that had no ceiling. And then he says they went to Nov and they built a mikdash there. And then they went to Givon and built a mikdash there. And then from Givon they went to a Beit Olamim. But the implication from the Rambam is that every single one of these places was a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Asuli Mikdash. So unlike the Smag, who said the only mitzvah, the only eternal commandment is to build an eternal sanctuary, the Rambam understands the Asuli Mikdash, the commandment about the Mishkan, to be setting up an eternal commandment of building a place of worship. And that commandment was fulfilled not just with the Beit HaMikdash, it was fulfilled with the Mishkan in the Midbar, it was fulfilled with the Mishkan at Shiloh, and it was even fulfilled with these very temporary locations of Gilgal, right when they crossed the Jordan River, and Nov and Givon, where at times they didn't even have an Aron, they didn't even have an Ark of the Covenant there. Now, the Rambam has to address, if this is our eternal commandment. So the commandment is not tied to Yerushalayim. It's not tied to a temporary, to a permanent Beit HaMikdash, to the permanent place. So that sounds like we have the commandment right now, right? We should be able to we should have to build one of these, a Bayit LaHashem, somewhere right now. It doesn't have to be Yerushalayim. Okay, so what happened? Kevan shenivna hamikdash in source 8, still halacha gimel. Once the mikdash was built, be Yerushalayim. Nesru kol hamikomo kulan livno behen bayit lahashem. Ulahakir behen karban. So once we hit Yerushalayim, all the other places became forbidden for building the Beit HaMikdash and for bringing sacrifices. Ve'ein sham bayit ledore hadoros ela be Yerushalayim bovad uvahar hamoriah sheba. The only eternal place for building a bayit is in Yerushalayim. Okay, so this is what I want to take a little bit of time to think about. The way that the Rambam lays this out, I found somewhat surprising because I never expected that these very, very temporary locations, Gilgal, Nov, Givon, where there was something set up, there was a Mizbeach set up for just a short number of years in a very temporary kind of fashion, I would never expect that to be the same fulfillment of a commandment, the same commandment as building a Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash seems like it is something that should be fundamentally different. And even more surprising to me is the way that the Rambam describes this in Halacha Gimel. There's nothing sort of essentially tied to the mitzvah about the location of Yerushalayim. It just happened to be that once we hit Yerushalayim, so now all the other places are forbidden. We can't fulfill the commandment of building a house of worship anywhere else. But it's nothing essential to the commandment of building a mikdash. It's just that once we hit Yerushalayim, everywhere else became out of bounds. And so now we're waiting to fulfill this commandment in Yerushalayim because that happens to be now the only place where we can fulfill this commandment. And the Kesef Mishnah, okay, so over here, this is Rav Yosef Karo in Source 9. He's intrigued by this debate between the Rambam and the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol. And what he tries to do is he tries to think about the psukim that they each bring as their sources for the mitzvah. Okay, so he brings the words of the Rambam, he brings the words of the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvah, he brings the words of the Smag. And now he tries to address why does each one pick the source pasuk that they picked? Okay, so this is in source nine. So he says, "V'nira shelo ratza lomar." So the smog he's talking about. He says it seems like the smog didn't want to say shah mitzvah he basuvi mikdash kamo shakata rabbeinu. He doesn't want to say the mitzvah is this make for me a mikdash, a sanctuary, which was in our parsha and truma, like the Rambam said. Mishum dehahu kra b'mishkan shebemidbar ma'iri. That's only talking about the Mishkan that's in the Midbar, in the desert. So that's not fitting for an eternal mitzvah. V'rabbeinu lo nira lo sheha mitzvah hi v'haya ha-makom asher yivchar Hashem Elokeichem k'smag. The Rambam didn't bring the pasuk that the smog brought, you know, the in Devarim, the place that God chooses, that's where it'll go. Why? Mishum dehatam lo pakit livno tabeya b'chira ela sipor b'amahu. Over there, the pasuk isn't saying you must build this place. It's just saying there will exist a place. It's just a description. It's not a commandment. And then the Smog tries to sort of address the difference between the Rambam and the Smog. And sorry, the Kesef Mishnah, yes, tries to address these differences. So we'll skip over here. He wants to defend the Rambam essentially. So even though the pasuk that the Rambam brings is in the mid is about the Mishkan in the Midbar, mashma dahai kra klahu l'chol makom, bein la Mishkan she b'Midbar, bein la Shilo b'Nov v'Givon, bein la Beis Olamim. So even though the pasuk in the Mish about the Mishkan is just talking about that temporary sanctuary, it seems that it's really meant to be about all of the dwelling places, all the mikdashes that we're going to build, whether in the Midbar, Shiloh, Nov, Givon, or the Beit HaMikdash. So I want to pause over here and take a few minutes to think about this debate between the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol and the Rambam, and sort of think about the different sources that they're using and what they each view as the essential commandment. For the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, I think a lot of it is very intuitive, or at least at a first glance, it's very intuitive, because the only mitzvos that are eternal are the ones that apply for all time. And the Mishkan was not a dwelling place that lasted for all times. When we received the commandments to build the Mishkan, it was inherently a commandment with a clock on it, right? With a timeout attached. Because they weren't going to be using the Mishkan for all time. I think the Smog looks at that and says, there's no way that that can be an eternal commandment. It was one that was inherently limited. And the Rambam seems to be saying, well, even though the Mishkan was inherently limited, we should look at, the greater idea of what a mikdash is. And that's the idea that's going to be, that's what the mitzvah is really going to be. It's going to be this idea of worshiping. I think that makes a lot of sense on a first thinking through. But I want to go back and look at the words of the Smag a little bit more carefully and see if there's something more that seems to be bothering him about the mitzvah of the Mishkan. So let's go back over here. Let's see, here we are. Okay, so we're going back to source five. Okay. So he opens up again, speaking about the mitzvah that the Jews are going to have upon them once they enter the land. And in this, included in this is first they have to establish a king, and then they have to destroy Amalek. And then only once a God gives them peace from their enemies is there going to be this mitzvah of building a Beit HaBechira, of building a Beit HaMikdash. Now, the Rambam brings this introduction. He brings this idea as well in the Sefer HaMitzvot. He spoke about, oh, these three mitzvot that they'll have to do, but he was really only doing that to show that there exists a commandment of building a Mikdash. But the Smag seems to be saying, no, this, the timing of this, is very important. For the Smag, it seems that the mitzvah of Mikdash can only kick in once the Jewish people are in a settled state. They have to enter the land. They have to establish a monarchy. They have to eliminate their enemy, their let's say ideological enemy, Amalek. And then once they're fully settled, that's when the commandment of building a mikdash is going to kick in. For the Smag, it seems that there couldn't be a mitzvah of mikdash when the Jewish people were not in a settled state. There couldn't be a mitzvah of mikdash when there was still instability in the Jewish people. And the pasuk that he brings, these psukim that he's bringing, I think describe this state of being in a very strong way. It's going to be when they cross the Yarden and they're settled in the land. And it's not just that they're settled in the land, but there's going to be a place that God chooses to rest his name there. And that's where you're going to bring all of your sacrifices. And if we're thinking about the differences between the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash, if we look back at the Psukim, so we're going to go back to source one, Vasuli Mikdash, in Pasuk Chet, Vasuli Mikdash, Bishachanti b'tocham. So where is God going to dwell with with the Mishkan? He's going to dwell amongst B'nai Yisrael, amongst the people. But there's no notion of a chosen place. There's no notion of a permanent place. God's dwelling place will be wherever the people are. The Psukim in Re'eh and Devarim are painting a very different kind of picture. They're painting a picture of B'nai Yisrael being established, of B'nai Yisrael being settled. And once B'nai Yisrael are established and settled, once they've destroyed the idolatry in the land, once they've cleared out a land that is ready for them to populate it with their nationality and their religious ideas, then there's going to be a place that God chooses. And it's not just at any place, it's Mikol Shivtecham. There's a sense of a tribal settlement in the land, and God is going to place his name there. It's still amongst B'nai Yisrael, that's not lost, But with the Mishkan, that was the only place of God's dwelling. It was this sort of amorphous shifting, but it was amongst Bnei Yisrael. But once they enter the land and settle, there's going to be a permanent location. God will choose a place to settle there. And then what's going to happen? V'shechno tidrashu, the form of worship is going to change as well. Instead of God dwelling amongst the people are going to have to seek out God. They are going to have to go to his presence. And when is this all taking place? It's taking place once they cross the Jordan, once they settle in the land. And what is land? It's land that God gives to them, that God passes an inheritance to them. And God will give them this peace. And then God will choose a place, and the people will come there. And it seems that for the Smag, this is an essential component of the mitzvah of Mikdash. You can't have an eternal mitzvah. You can't have a commandment of building a Mikdash without this permanence, without this divinely chosen location, and without this model of the people being settled and seeking God out. And indeed, if we look at the way that the Smag continues here, back in source 5, V'ne'emar, so he's describing Har HaMoriah, and he says, V'ne'emar ve'yichal Shlomo livnot et Beit Hashem b'Yerushalayim b'Har HaMoriah. So Shlomo began to build the Mikdash in Yerushalayim and Har HaMoriah. And what is Har HaMoriah? V'sham ne'akad Yitzchak. That's where Akedat Yitzchak was. Shene'emar, v'lech lecha al Har HaMoriah, go to Har HaMoriah. This place that the Mikdash is going to be built is an essential place of the people following where God chooses, and engaging in that kind of submission and sacrifice. And Rav Soloveitchik speaks extensively in a lot of different places about, you know, what is the paradigm set up by Akedat Yitzchak and on Har HaMoriah. It's a model of complete submission to God's will, of the people bending to what God has chosen. And I think it's possible that for the Smag, you can't have a mitzvah of building a mikdash. It can't be the same mitzvah of mikdash in the midbar and in the established place in Yerushalayim. Because in the midbar, God is dwelling amongst the people. The people, you know, they're encamped around it. It, you know, the people are, that's the location. They're sort of, there's nowhere for them where they have to go. The Shekhinah is dwelling amongst them and with them. But with the Beit HaMikdash, we're living in a totally different kind of setup, where we are now established in our land, and God chooses a place where we must seek him out. And that place is the place where Akedat Yitzchak happened, where there was the ultimate act of submitting to the will of God, of following what God tells you, of seeking him out. I think that perhaps for the Smag, this is why you can't have this kind of, this the mitzvah, it can't possibly be a mitzvah from the Mishkan, from the Midbar. There's a unique element that we have that we only get once we reach the permanent location. And it's not just a mitzvah of, you know, build a temple. Okay, so wherever you build it, you build it. There's a fundamentally different quality of seeking out God that is essential to the mitzvah of building a sanctuary. I think to me personally, I think that speaks a lot to me about, you know, sort of some essential differences between the Mishkan and the Mikdash. Now I want to think about the Rambam a little bit. Okay, so the Rambam disagrees with this monk. The Rambam thinks, no, it was the same mitzvah the whole time. It was a mitzvah when we were in the Midbar. It was the same mitzvah when we were crossed the Yarden and were still not settled. It was the same mitzvah once we reach Yerushalayim and build the Beit HaMikdash. The whole thing all along is the same mitzvah. Okay. So for the Rambam, what's going on here? And it seems that for the Rambam, this idea of a permanent location is not going to impact the commandment itself. Now, the Rambam, of course, thinks that Yerushalayim is important. And if we go back to source 8, in Halacha Gimel, he addresses this, right? He says, once we reached Yerushalayim, all the other places were forbidden. And there is a permanence to Har HaMoriah, to the temple in Jerusalem, to the location of Jerusalem, that once we reach it, it will exclude everything else. But for the Rambam, the fundamental mitzvah is to build a place where we can create these sacrifices and where we can all gather. It's the act of creating this temple that is important for the Rambam. Now, the essence of the mitzvah for the Rambam is not tied to the seeking out, to this active, to the location. It's tied instead to the people creating a mikdash wherever it is that they are. I think the Kesef Mishnah is thinking about this, where he's saying, you know, the description in Devarim, oh, it's a very nice description, and it's a description of a permanent state, a stable state, but there's no commandment there. It's just a description. Seems that for the Rambam, the essence is the people building a temple, the people building a mikdash. What is the commandment? It's the people, vasuli mikdash. You must build for me a temple. And that is where God is going to dwell. And that does not need to be tied to any location. B'nai Yisrael always have the ability to construct a place of worship. Now, of course, once you reach the place of the Akedah, once you reach Yerushalayim, so that has an ultimate, it's a paradigmatic location for the people building a place of sacrifice. Sort of once we reach that, we can't move on from there. We can't just pass that over. We say, okay, we found the place where we want to be building for all time. But for the Rambam, the essential mitzvah seems to be the people creating a place of worship for God, the people creating a place for bringing the karbanos, for gathering together. There's nothing essential about location, and there's nothing essential about that permanent, stable state. And so we can have, in Nov we could have it, in Givon we can have it, we can have it in the desert, we can really have it anywhere, as long as the people are creating a place of worship for God. For the Rambam, that is the essential mitzvah. I thought that this was, I haven't seen this debate before. And I have wondered in the past about sort of, think in the back of your mind, there's commandments about building the Mishkan. There's no commandments about building the Mikdash, but it's very interesting for me to explore, sort of the connection between these, the temporary and the permanent. To end us off, I want to focus a little bit more on specifically the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash for the Rambam. Because in the Smog, the Beit HaMikdash, as we said, has this very, it has this fundamentally different quality, the Beit HaMikdash. For the Rambam, it seems like the Mishkan, the Beit HaMikdash, Shiloh, Nov, Givon, Gilgal, all the different places where B'nai Yisrael created these structures, they're all the same. They're all basically the same. Okay. But that's not exactly true. Oh, sorry, we skipped source 10. Source 10 is the Rambam discussing. Oh, we'll talk about it in a minute. Okay. So for the Rambam, it's not exactly, from the first parak of Be'ah Bechira, it seems that, all these different places are all the same. They're all the same mitzvah. But the Rambam does have a distinction for the Mishkan in the Midbar and the Beit HaMikdash. So I want to take the last few minutes to explore that. Okay, so in source 10, we're still in that first parak of Be'ah Bechira. So he says, Be'ilohin ha-dvarim shehin ikr b'vinyan ha-bayit. So these are the things that are fundamental for building a bayit. Here he means a Mikdash, everything that we've been discussing. So you have to have a place called Kodesh and a Kodesh Kadashim. So these are different. There's the Holy of Holies. There's a place called the Holies, and that's called the Ulam. Sort of, there's an entry hall, and then there's going to be a barrier, a dividing wall around this whole area, and the whole thing is called a Mikdash. Okay. Now, it seems according to the Rambam that all of the places that we've discussed had this breakdown. It had a Holy of Holies, it had a whole an area that was holy, and then it had an outside part with a surrounding wall. It has this basic structure, and that's what's called a Mikdash. But I want to speak about something that the Mishkan in the Midbar and the Beit HaMikdash had that not all of the places had. So I'm saying this is what you need to meet the Mikdash status. But now let's take a look at this Mishnah in Zvachim. And we spoke about this Mishnah as well when I was here for Parshat Re'eh. Now we're going to focus on a different part of the Mishnah. So it's speaking about these Mishnah are speaking about the progression of the place of worship, the Mishkan in the Midbar, in Gilgal, Shiloh. Okay, so for each of them, it goes through where the sacrifices could be eaten. So the most the stringent or holy of sacrifices for every single location had to be eaten within the walls, within the Mikdash area. But what differs is where the lighter kinds of sacrifices could be eaten. So let's take a look. So up until the Mishkan, oh sorry, Mishahu Kam HaMishkan, right? So once the Mishkan was built, where did we have the Kachim Kalim, the lighter sacrifices? They could be eaten in the whole camp of Israel, the whole Machane Israel. Okay, once we reached Gilgal. Again, the most stringent sacrifices can only be eaten inside the Mikdash, the Mishkan, but the lighter sacrifices could be eaten anywhere. Okay, so when we were in the Midbar, the lighter sacrifices could be eaten in the camp of Israel. In Gilgal, which was a more informal location, they could be eaten anywhere. In Shiloh, where they had a more permanent kind of Mishkan set up, again, the stringent ones had to be eaten inside the Mishkan area, and the lighter sacrifices could be eaten wherever you could see the Mishkan at Shiloh. Then when we reached Nov and Givon, which had a sort of a more temporary kind of feel, and there was no Aron, then the lighter sacrifices could be eaten in any of the cities. And then once we reached Yerushalayim, then we say Kachim Kalim and the lighter sacrifices and something called a Maaser Sheni could be eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim. Okay, so this is a lot of information. I know I'm going to try to distill it in the few minutes that we have over here. But the basic thing is that when they were in the Midbar, the lighter sacrifices could be eaten in the camp of Israel. And then once they crossed the Yarden, when they were sort of in a less settled kind of situation, the lighter sacrifices could be eaten anywhere. So in the beginning, it was in any place because there were no Jewish cities. Once there were Jewish cities, then they could be in any Jewish city. And even in Shiloh, there wasn't a place with borders really where they could eat. It was just wherever you could see. And then in Yerushalayim, once we hit the Beit HaMikdash, then you could only eat the lighter sacrifices within the walls. And in the Gemara, there's some discussion about this description in the Midbar of Bechol Machane Yisrael and all of the camp. And they're discussing whether there was a sense of camp in the Midbar. And someone first says there was no sense of camp, but then we refute that and we say, no, there was a real encampment. Right? And it seems that, this debate is centered on the way that the people moved. Sort of, do we have a sense of a fixed encampment with borders? And the Gemara ends up saying yes, even though, it's moving, there still is a sense of a machane, of an encampment. And it's, we have an established location. Now, what the Rambam does with this, he brings these halachot up in Beit HaBechir, where we started, in the seventh parak. And he says, Shalosh machano hayu bamidbar. So there were three encampments in the desert, or three layers of encampments. There was a machana Yisrael. So this was like the largest circle you can imagine, where all of the tribes were encamped. Then there was a machana Levia. So there was an inner encampment of the tribe of Levi, and then there was a Machane Shechina. And the Machane Shechina is Mipetach Chatzar HaMoed Delifnim, so from the opening of the tent of meeting of the Mishkan and inwards. And then he says, Ukenegdan Ledoro. So in opposite this, or sort of in accordance with this, we have this set up eternally, Ledoro. From the entrance of Jerusalem until Har HaBayit is like that outer encampment in the desert, Kemachana Yisrael. And from the entrance to Har HaBayit until the beginning of the Beit HaMikdash area, the Azara, is like Machana Levia, the tribe of Levi's encampment. And then the Beit HaMikdash itself was the Machana Shechina. And if we look back at source 5 over, sorry, at source 10, we can think for a minute in terms of machane. So he's saying what the Rambam is saying, what do we need to be a mikdash, to be a sanctuary? You need to have the Holy of Holies and the Holies, and then this sort of area right outside of it. Okay, but if you match up the descriptions, it seems that the Rambam thinks all that you need to be a Beit HaMikdash is what he calls the machane shechina, that innermost encampment. And that's what they all have. They all have an innermost encampment. However, the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash did not just have an innermost encampment. They also had these two other layers of encampments. They had a Machane Levia and a Machane Yisrael. And I just want to focus on this for one more minute because I think in the Rambam, you can come away with the sense that every sanctuary, every mikdash that we have made, all have the same status. They're all exactly the same as each other. They're all fulfilling the same mitzvah. But over here, the Rambam is telling us, no, there's something special about the Mishkan in the Midbar and the Beit HaMikdash. And these two places, they didn't just have that innermost encampment, the Machane Shechina. They didn't just have a place of worship, but the Midbar, the Mishkan in the Midbar, and the Beit HaMikdash both created these concentric spheres of Kedusha, the greater sense of Machane. We spoke actually last time about sort of the differences between these temporary places of worship and the Mishkan in the Midbar and the Beit HaMikdash. And for all the other places, in Shiloh, in Gilgal, in Nov, and Givon, we did have a Mikdash, right? The Rambam is very explicit about that. But we didn't have any sense of Machane, of encampment. And I forgot to bring the source over here, but there's a very interesting Gemara in Shabbos. I think maybe it's in the 30s, Lama Gimel, something like that, that's speaking about the Mishkan in the Midbar, where we say sort of, did the Mishkan have a place? And we end up saying it does have a place, even though it didn't have a fixed geographic location. It was always the place that God told them to be. It was built always al pi Hashem, in the place that God determined. And I think over here, the Rambam is alluding to this quality that both the Mishkan and the Midbar and the Beit HaMikdash both had. And that even though the Mishkan and the Midbar did not have a fixed geographic location, it created a kedushat makom. It created a machana, an encampment that had halachic ramifications. It was a makom of kedusha, as we could see from Zvachim, because over there you could eat your sacrifices. That's not something that you can It created a boundary. It created a place where the sacrifices could be eaten. Now, when we were in Gilgal, when we were in all these other places, there was no boundary like that, because it was sort of everywhere that wasn't the Mikdash was all basically the same. But in the Midbar and in the with the Beit HaMikdash, there's a Kedushat Makom, a sanctified area that emanates from the Mikdash, the Mishkan that was built there. And I think that idea that the smog might be alluding to, the idea of the essentialness of a place that God chooses, that we need to go to, I think that for the Rambam, that idea can still be seen in the way that the Mishkan and the Midbar and the Beit HaMikdash are both singled out, in the way that the Mishkan, even though it wasn't a permanent geographic location, it was always al pi Hashem. It was always a place that God determined that they should be. And in this way, where they both have that divinely chosen location, they both have a sense of machna, of a kedushat makom, of creating a sanctified boundary around the temple that we built. I'm gonna end here, because I think we only have a couple of minutes left. But would love to discuss, more of these ideas. And I think it's also just very important for us to think about these ideas of building a sanctuary today, when we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, we don't have a Mishkan. I think it's very important for us to still keep these ideas in mind, and God willing, we'll all merit to see the building of the temple in our lifetime. Okay, thank you very much. Now I guess we'll do questions.
Thank you. Okay, any questions? Bakashi, you can unshare your screen if you'd like now.
I think this is a very, very beautiful Dvar Torah, and I thank you very much for it. What I'm missing from your Dvar Torah, and obviously you couldn't do it, is the opinion of Ramban, who says that whose opinion I think is the most plausible, who thinks that the Mishkan shows the paradigm of the Beit HaMikdash, which would have been built if the Bnei Israel hadn't committed these Chet HaEgel.
So I think that you're alluding to a machlokas that I think we really see the most between Rashi and the Ramban about the placement of these psukim in the commandment, and would we have had a temporary mikdash commandment
exactly.
at all?
Exactly.
Yes, that is definitely an interesting debate. But what I'm interested in, I think a difference over here is sort of, well, now that we do have the temporary one, sort of, do we view the temporary one as being part of an eternal commandment or not? But the Ramban and Rashi debate is very, very interesting. Would love to get into that another time. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
You were fantastic, if I may say so.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
What's Beis Olamim?
Oh, the Beit Olamim is a way to reference the Beit HaMikdash.
All right, any other questions, comments, Vakasha? Okay, otherwise we'll say thank you. I don't know if you addressed, I see one question in the chat
box.
Oh, I see
this with the Rambam's understanding.
Yeah, that was, he just spoke about the Ramban, yeah.
Yes, and then I see there's one with the Rambam's understanding extended in a sense to building Vatekin SEO in Gullus. Oh, that's very interesting. I mean, the Rambam, in the end, he does say, you know, the only place where we can achieve this mitzvah is in Yerushalayim. Once we reach Yerushalayim, we exclude all other locations. But it is an interesting idea in that he doesn't have that location essentialness. So it could be that he would view a synagogue as sort of a mini version. That's a very interesting idea.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Zora. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you all for coming.
Okay. And tomorrow morning, my share on the Siddur, 9:15 tomorrow morning, Rabbi Liebtag Sunday. And of course, a week from Sunday, I'm sure you've all gotten the email. We have a mental health program, an important program, a difficult subject in many ways, but a very important subject. We have 8, I think, world-class, top-notch speakers, experts in from all kinds of fields and areas. So that's a week Sunday, March 9th, which I just realized Israel will only be 6 hours ahead. We changed the clock on March the 8th here, of course, it's officially March the 9th, 2 a.m. But in Israel, so for about 3 weeks, I think we're going to be 1 hour closer to Israel. So I don't think there's anybody in Israel now online, but we'll have to mention that and point that out in our shiur and come up. But okay, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Dvora, and Shabbat Shalom. Please invite a friend to come to a class, and we hope to see you soon.
It was brilliant and not boring at all, Rabbi Kalman.
No, I didn't. I just meant these parshiot aren't, as they say, you know, when I was in Rav Schechter's here, so he would often comment, this is like, I know it sounds like, I don't mean it. This is a long piece of the Gemara, a long, boring piece. I don't think anybody's going to tell you that Parshat Truma is as exciting as Chayei Sarah or Vayeshev, you know, or Mika. Like, it just... But that doesn't mean it's not as meaningful and can't be made exciting. So I was trying to say, you know, look how our speaker can take something that looks dry and make it exciting. That's all. So I hope that wasn't misunderstood from the beginning. But, you know, until Kedoshim people sort of, you know, they're not quite as excited on the Parshat Shavua. What can I tell you? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's just me. But okay. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you and Laila Tov. We hope to
see you soon. Laila Tov.
Okay, Laila Tov.
Thank you, Rabbi Kalman, for having me back.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I see Tara was just here. Hello.
Hi, Tara.
Okay. Hi. You can stay. You can stay on and talk to each other if you'd like, but you know, but it's nice, you know. Zoom has a sort of friendly, you know, atmosphere. You know, people, yeah, all these people who I don't know, but I know them because, you know, we learn together online. It's a beautiful thing. Okay, light it up.